Flamingo Road Studios presents Broken Oath, Death Run from Havana, a novel by John D. Trudell. Read for you by Victoria Taft. Chapter 1. Lost in Havana. Walking the Ground. Present Day. It was the details that gotcha, Raven thought. He'd been doing low-profile surveillance in Havana for a week, learning the lay of the land, working up a mission feel, studying patterns, sensing the street, learning to blend in. I had three of my team in country, me and the close-in half of my crew, Rudy and Terry. Both of them spoke Spanish. Rudy was fluent, 6'4", bald as a billiard ball, and jet black. He looked like a pro athlete or maybe some high-end muscle for one of the cartels. Terry Costin, a muscled-up white guy, was just under 6 feet and scruffy. A big black guy and a seedy beach-bum sidekick. The security group, TSG, had gotten them bulletproof legends as security for a well-known Mexican oil firm. If challenged, they would check out clean. Both had been Marine Force recon. They were used to working undercover in red zones. The original plan had been to develop a broad footprint, a reusable presence, including developing a base outside Havana in the country. It didn't work out. Cuba is still in the 19th century. Many people walk, but in the country, as many use horses, both to ride and pull carts. We saw wagons pulled by oxen on the highway. We traveled by open truck, stayed in crude motels and ate in restaurants all owned by the government. For the truck, hop on. 8 cents. And you stood. Basic hygiene was an unexpected challenge. In the public restrooms, rare, but there were a few. Washing your hands was interesting. You need 3 things to wash your hands. Water, soap, towel to dry. Well, the towel was your shirt or pants because there were never any towels. In a third of the toilets, there was no water. And in one case, there was a lady standing beside the sink with a bottle of water to pour over your hands. In most places, there was no soap. Toilet seats did not exist in Cuba. We never saw one. We toted our own water and did what needed doing in the fields. There was one room we'd never forget. Rudy's dash for the shitter was followed shortly by a string of profanity. Terry bravely rushed in to defend his teammate from poisonous snakes, scorpions, or whatever. It seemed the no-toilet-seat theme was exacerbated by a no-toilet-paper crisis. In its place, somebody had carefully torn individual sheets of toilet paper from a roll and placed them on the back of the toilet. Laughing with tears running down his cheeks, Terry handed him a single square and beat a hasty retreat. He claimed Rudy had just set a new standard for dipshit. Holding my nose, I passed Rudy in a small pack of Kleenex wipes. The mission went on. So much for our rural base of ops. It was ridiculous. Forget the broad footprint. Well, maybe we could find some gaps to exploit in Havana. Improvise. I gave them the lecture and dispatched my team to what was once the finest hotel in town, the Riviera Classic. We met in a park a day later to debrief. They were less than ecstatic. 20 stories with 3 elevators. Only one worked. That one had a government minder running it and a police station a block away. The shower at the Riviera had hot water, the only one with hot water we found in Cuba. It was fondly remembered when we scratched it off the list, but scratch it we did. We never did find an acceptable safe house in Havana. Terry, our beach bum, suggested basing at a marina. Why not? I sent them off to find us a fast cabin cruiser with an acceptable registry and living quarters. Once they had it, they could scoot over to Gitmo for a test run. They were to line up some kit, but to come back squeaky clean, running empty, and see if it triggered surveillance. They might get to test their IDs. It was a dumb plan, but I didn't have a better one. There wasn't a lot of downside, Terry said. The Cubans were tolerant of drug running into the U.S. so long as adequate bribes were paid to the right people. We were learning that the best way to operate in Havana was on foot. Car rentals stood out. The ubiquitous tourist cars, mostly old American Chevys from about 1941 to 1957, plus an occasional Cadillac convertible, were driven by locals whose livelihoods depended on keeping their masters happy. A driver could make more in a day with tips than a government-approved medical doctor did in a month. All these vehicles had long since worn out their engines. They were mostly powered by puny four-cylinder Russian-made diesels. We'd timed the traffic in the country as averaging about 5 miles an hour. The rural roads were terrible. They looked like they'd been carpet-bombed. What with potholes, pedestrians, and traffic, the tourist cars did about the same in the city. We figured maybe 10 miles an hour at the best, and 20 to 30 in spurts. Forget a fast getaway. It would be like trying to outrun the cops on a lawnmower. My job was roaming Havana on foot while my team was off on their nautical adventure, checking possible target sites and running counter-surveillance routes, CSRs. I'd been doing it for days. I'd never picked up ticks. Other than verifying security was lax, neither did I learn anything useful. It was boring work, hot and sweaty. My feet hurt. I was tired. And it was now full dark. This time I approached my hotel from the back, the blind side, down an alley that split the block between Tulipan and Canille. It was a good CSR path, a good place to check for tails. There were no lights and no illumination from buildings. You could easily see if anyone entered from either end. I looked back. It was clear there and clear ahead. And then it wasn't. A large figure emerged from somewhere ahead of me just as the moon came out from behind a cloud. I saw a flash of white teeth. This one was huge. Godzilla. Then I saw a knife. He held it low, blade up, at his right side. From there, he could jab or slash. Not good. This one is trained. Yeah, I'd had the training, but I hated knives. Unarmed, the best bet is to run like hell if you can. Next is to do something sudden that prevents the start of an attack. Third is to create distance and deploy a longer-range weapon. The last is to go berserk and hope not to get fatally cut going through and over your attacker. I opted for number one, turning and fleeing. Two figures emerged in front of me, one from each side. The one on the left, smaller, was holding a pole or club. I went for his buddy, target number one, brushed his defenses aside, and connected with a Muay Thai kick to his knee and a fist blow to the side of his head. He sagged. I grabbed his arm and spun, just in time for his head to connect with number two's pole.